In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, one God, amen. Thank everybody for joining us today in the Taban, talking about a very important subject to us and our children, and for their education, and to get a better understanding of maybe a subject that is not frequently spoken about, and maybe one that we are a bit apprehensive to speak to our children about. Of course, I'm referring here to the sex education that's our children were here in school, if you elect to. This evening will be split in two parts. The first part, Lillian will review with you kind of like a broad outline of what they were offered in school. And then I will, the second part is how we can complement what is done at school if you so choose to have your children exposed to what they will teach in school. And then at the end, we can have some questions, some Q&A. We can do it after Lillian and also after me as well. And hopefully we can answer everybody's questions and concerns and hopefully kind of have a better idea if we want to sign our kids up for this or if we want them to, you know, opt out. But we'll begin with Lillian. We'll give you a short presentation and, you know, and then followed by Q&A.
Okay, I'm going to start by just prefacing that I only know and I only research the Cyfair school district and what they're going to be presenting. If your children are not in Cyfair or in a private school or in a different school district, they may not be using and most likely are not using the same curriculum. I urge you to please do not think that it's the same curriculum, because every school district makes its own decision and chooses its own curriculum. Go and ask and make sure, if you are not in the Cyfair district, what curriculum is being taught, and find out the details about it. In Cyfair, what you can do, the Cyfair curriculum for fourth and fifth grade is basically a video. It's through the PBS or PG. So the website for the preschool, and you can go and visit the website for the fourth and fifth graders. It's the same video that they take. It's basically just talking about the body changes. And for the fifth grade, what they do is they separate boys and girls. It's usually done on the Friday before spring break. And fourth and fifth grade parents, you should have received a form already at home for you to sign them either to attend or not attend. If they attend, then they're split up. The nurse is the one that talks to the girls, and the boys, usually a PE coach or one of the science, a male science teacher or math teacher is the one that does the presentation with the boys, and they have them separated out. But we're not going to play the video tonight, but you can go to the website. It's on the form that they sent home. You can go to the website. I urge you to watch the video through. Again, it only talks about the changes. There's really fourth and fifth grade. It just talks about how your body is changing, how you need to start wearing deodorant, just the types of changes, the bodily changes. Yes, the puberty changes that are happening in them. So it's not too much detail, but Cyfair has changed. In the past, they used to start in fifth grade. Now they start in fourth grade, and they do the same video both in fourth and fifth grade. So that's fourth and fifth grade. Starting in seventh grade, this is the topic or the curriculum that's being taught is called, it's by Scott and Wells, and the curriculum is called Worth the Wait. To get to this website, you can actually go to worththewait.org. It's also on the sheet that they sent home, asking for your permission, giving you the permission for it. This goes into a bit more detail starting in seventh grade. Again, if you're in a different school district, some school districts start in sixth grade with the details. Please know that what your district is doing and what your school is doing before. In Cyfair School District, they start in seventh grade. So in seventh grade, the topics that are going to be discussed, they sent home this page that says the seventh grade lessons in review. And then on the bottom of the page, this is where you have the option of either selecting. Right here where you can select, you put your information in there, and then you can either select or not select to opt in your child. And you can also opt in the child either for the whole program or only for part of the program or only for or out of the entire program. Cypher TEKS, which are the requirements, is lesson 3 and part of lesson 4, which is lesson 3 talks about the anatomy of the body. Both the female and the male anatomy is discussed, and that is part of their science curriculum, which they are tested over at the end of the unit. If you opt them out, they will go in the library. They will be given this packet, which has the handouts, which describe, which gives them the vocabulary that they have to study. They'll have to be able to label also the parts of the body, and this is what they're going to be tested over. Okay, so you will have to, if you opt them out, you will have to teach them this and review this with them, and they will be in the library during their science lesson for the 2 weeks that they're being given the lesson. I'm going to briefly go and tell you topic by topic. Okay, so on the first lesson, they call it the essential human needs. And so this is basically the day one where they're going to go in and introduce what they're going to be talking about for the next 10 lessons. It's 10 lessons in total, and the last lesson is usually just the review of all of the lessons. So the first lesson is called The Essential of Human Needs, and it's an introductory lesson. It sets the ground rules for the classroom. The teacher sets up the box for questions. This is at the Cypher School Districts, the box for the questions, and she'll say, if you have an appropriate question, feel free to raise your hand. If you do not have an appropriate question, or if you're embarrassed to ask the question, or if you think that the question may be offensive to somebody or anything, put it in the box. The teacher reviews the question in the box, and she will either answer the questions the next day, and then at the next day, any questions that were turned into the box that she didn't answer, she gives the statement, or he gives the statement at the end of the day, and says, any questions I did not answer, if you submitted a question in the box, any question I did not answer means that you need to speak with your parents about it. And they refer them back to the parents, which is very good. Just to give the Worth the Wait is a medically based curriculum, and it is an abstinence-based curriculum, which they highly emphasize the choice of abstinence as the being the best choice and the healthiest choice. And so that is repeated throughout the curriculum. They also set some ground rules about not putting anyone down, not giving personal examples as part of the questions, and they really specifically stick to the script for the teachers regarding each slide. So the teachers, when one of the students has a question, the teacher will ask, do you think, before she even asks the question, do you think this is an appropriate question? If the child says yes, then she says, ask your questions. If the child says, I'm not sure, or any other answer, then she tells them, here's a note card, and put your question in the box, and I will answer it for you tomorrow. Okay? So they're trying their best to limit what is being said in the classroom. But again, they do not have control over what's being said outside of the classroom. Basically, the essential human needs that they identify are security, connection, purpose, support, and the contribution. They do helping hands about how these needs, these five areas of essential needs, you can meet for others, and others can meet from you. At the end of each lesson, they send home a Let's Talk page, and this is the Let's Talk page for the parents. So it tells you a brief summary of what was discussed that day in the lesson, and then it gives you two or three maximum questions to how to open the discussion and answer the discussion about the topic that was discussed with your children, and then you sign it and send it back to school. So that's the explanation of lesson one. Lesson two talks and defines about, it talks about friends and mentors, and it defines the levels of friendships. It discusses the various levels of relationships and the difference between a friend and a mentor, the difference between the good characteristics of what makes a good friend or a healthy friendship, which the characteristics that they talk about as being good is caring, trustworthy, encouraging, honest, and have good communication. Some of the questions that they ask about how do you differentiate between a good friend or not so good friend is who would never ask you to get involved with a risky health behavior? Who are the ones that that if you do something wrong will tell you? Who congratulates you when you do something good? So they give them a series of questions to help them identify as an introduction to the lesson, to help them identify what a good friend is, what not a good friend is, what the meaning of a mentor is someone who encourages you, helps you set goals, is older than you, and is more knowledgeable than you. Lesson three, again, this lesson three is the one that they will be tested over, and this is the required material that they will be expected to know as part of the science. It talks about puberty, it talks about the anatomy, and it does talk about pregnancy. Again, in seventh grade, it only talks about pregnancy as far as how pregnancy happens. In eighth grade and ninth grade, it goes into more detail about conception and the fetal development and more details. In eighth grade, they take it also in the science class. In ninth grade, it's a required class, and they take it in health, usually in their freshman year, depending on if it's in the beginning for the fall semester or the spring semester. With regards to puberty, there's no videos in the curriculum. It's a PowerPoint presentation, and the pictures that label are drawings, like hand drawings or computer drawings of the body parts. But they will need to know and be able to identify the body parts of the male and the body parts of the female. They will need to know the reproductive system and the parts of the reproductive system, pregnancy and how that occurs. They also talk about why teenagers end up getting pregnant and some of those types of things. They emphasize the importance of having a plan, an abstinence plan together beforehand. This again is in lesson three, which is one of the required topics that they have that they need to know. And you need to know the plan about how to handle situation, how to handle peer pressures, and how to avoid risky behavior. Again, they emphasize that abstinence is the only 100% effective choice, that is the best choice. And they don't say it from a religious point of view, but they do say it from a health point of view. They come at this as this is the healthiest choice to make at this age. Okay, lesson four. Lesson four talks about sexually transmitted diseases. It defines what sexually transmitted diseases are and the different types of sexually transmitted diseases. And this lesson also, it defines what sexual activity is. This is the lesson that defines all different types of sexual activity, including vaginal intercourse and the other types that they identify. They have four total different sexual activities that they talk about, and they don't go in detail in describing, but they give enough information about how each one occurs for the child to know what the meaning is. This is seventh grade, and then it's repeated in eighth grade and ninth grade. It's always done with the sexually transmitted diseases. And the reason, when I asked why they do this, the reason they said is because teenagers have a misconception that as long as if they're not having intercourse, then that means they're not being sexually active, which has created actually an increase in sexually transmitted diseases while it's decreased pregnancy. And so that's why they talk about the different types. And the good thing is that they make it clear to the children, or they're not children, to the teens, that this is still considered, any part of this or any one of these forms is considered sexual activity. That's the positive that I can take away. It talks about, again, that the abstinence is the healthiest choice. They do really do repeat that the abstinence is the healthiest choice throughout the curriculum. I do have to say that. Lesson five, it goes into why do some teens have sex? And so they discuss the reasons and the misconceptions. One of the misconceptions that the teens have and they start sexual activity early is because they think love equals sex or that sex equals love. And they go through that it does not. They have a clear presentation that it does not. It talks about the risks that are involved in choosing to get sexually active early. Pregnancies, STDs, emotional problems. It talks about the consequences of going with it. It feels good. It feels fun. It's fun to do. And it tells them that these, you know, it may feel fun, but these have immediate long-term effects and consequences for you. It also talks about peer pressure and that really choosing abstinence requires for you to be stronger and resist your peer pressure. And it also tells them that if you have friends who are involved in risky behaviors, then you're more likely to be involved in the risky behaviors. And that's why they talk about what the good characteristics of friendships are in the earlier lesson. In this lesson also, they talk a bit about impulse and self-control. And also drugs and alcohol as not keeping you in control if you're using that, and that then these also have long life consequences for you. It reminds them throughout this section about the consequences of the choices that they make, and again they repeat that the healthiest choice is to be abstinent and to avoid negative peer pressure. And so forth. Okay, lesson six, it talks about sex and the law. This defines the different types of sexual offenses, sexual harassment, sexual abuse, cyber harassment, and the different, and it gives it, they, it defines it and it gives the different types of examples of it. It also talks about pornography and the websites and sexual images. It talks about sexual predators both online and around you. So it gives them an education. It makes them aware. You know how a lot of our kids tell us that we're overprotective or that we are paranoid? So this is sort of a reality check with them also, that they're hearing it from someone else outside of our little bubble, that these are real dangers that exist in the world. It talks about why teens don't report sexual assault. It also talks about date rape and the types of date rape drugs, and the legal consequences for that. It also then goes about in there about how to protect yourself by being smart. But it tells them how to be smart if they are in a situation to avoid the drugs, the date drugs, only SIP. So the SMART stands for SIP, monitor, avoid, refuse, and throw away. And again, it talks about all of them, if they're outside in a group setting, how to keep track of their drink. Don't drink from punch bowls. It gives them ways to protect themselves out in the world if they find themselves at a function because they're involved in a group or an extracurricular activity. It's things that you would normally tell your kids anyway. Don't take drinks from a stranger. Don't drink something that you don't know. If something tastes funny, don't drink it, throw it away. Basically, it tells them the best thing to do is only drink something that they've opened. It also talks about the Texas law and how it's illegal for the legal age limits for having sex with younger children, older people to younger people. And then it also talks to them about creating your personal plan, how to set limits for in your plan, how to communicate your limits, how to respect your limits, and how to listen to others' limits, as well as, the healthiest choice is to abstain. Lesson seven talks about the character, that character matters. So we defined friendships and what great friendships are in one of the lessons. Here it defines positive characters and what the positive characteristics are. The characteristics of a best friend or a mentor. So we are more likely to become the same as those who are around us, which is something that we teach them here, to how to pick your friends, and that you are around, you know, who you are around makes you who you are eventually. So it also talks about the positive traits, and positive people attract those who have the same traits. Be a positive role model. More likely to succeed if you and reach your goals if you are a positive person and keeping these keeping your character in check. Lesson 8 talks about the health risk behaviors and the decision making processes. This actually is a very good lesson because it takes them through the steps of how to make a good decision. So how you make a good decisions, or is you need to know what your choices are. You need to know what the positives and the negatives and the consequence of each of those choices. And then what can I do to increase the likelihood of making a positive decision is one of the questions they ask them to ask. And then does this choice reflect good character? So it takes them, it helps them set up through their mind how to make a good decision and what to consider in making a good decision. And it also emphasizes that making the right decision and the good decision is always difficult, but it's best for your future if you make it. And again, it talks about avoiding risky behavior. Protecting yourself means to protect your future. The health risks that are mentioned are violence, tobacco use, which is smoking, or the use of tobacco, chewing tobacco, alcohol, drugs, sexual behaviors, unhealthy diets, physical inactivity, suicide, and some of the other ones are like the sexting or things like that. Those are the different types of other things that they talk about in that lesson. Lesson 9 is refusal skills. This gives them a lesson on how to say no and stand up for themselves when they are in a situation. It talks about how to use a stronger tone and a firm tone when you're saying no. It talks about what the difference between a passive tone, assertive tone, and an aggressive tone is, and when you should use each. It gives them scenarios, and they take them through some scenarios. And then, for example, some of the scenarios in the lesson is, how do you say no when you're on the phone or on with a boy and a girl are on the phone and they're pressuring you and asking you to meet so they can have so you can have sexual activity, or if they're making plans to go to hang out as a group, and then one of them tells them, okay, you tell your parents that we're going to the movies, but then you come over to my house because my parents are going to be out of town this weekend. So it gives them some of the scenarios, and you build your own plan, what they call their refusal skill plan, of how would you refuse the situation and be's. And all of this is just preparing them. The biggest part is giving them information and preparing them, going through these scenarios and preparing them, so when they are in the situation, they have an answer for it, and they know how to react. And they talk about the race to refuse, to say no, or if you say, you know, you may like the person. This happens a lot with the teenagers. I like the person, but I don't like their choices. Okay, you like the person, yes. So you say yes to the relationship, but you say no to the activity, and you offer a positive alternative if they want to, a positive alternative to the situation, and suggest an alternative. Or one of the other refusal skills that they talk about is just delaying and buying yourself time so you can think about the decision that you want to make. Lesson 10 reviews everything from making good choices, and it's a review. So it goes through everything. It goes through lesson 1 back through lesson 9 again, talks about the essential human needs, the characteristics of healthy relationships, mentors, puberty, male and female anatomy, the pregnancy and the details of it, STDs, refusal techniques, sexual assault, the health risk behaviors, the steps for making good decisions, and what you can do to make a good decision. Be a good friend, get involved, stay strong, be aware, be healthy, avoid alcohol and drugs and other risky behaviors, set goals, and be proud of yourself. So this was a quick overview of the 7th grade curriculum. 8th grade curriculum and what's discussed in 9th grade in health class is almost the same. In eighth grade, when they talk about puberty, anatomy, and pregnancy, they increase by talking about the fetal development and those stages. So that becomes part of their required science knowledge in that grade. And they also talk about parental responsibilities in lesson three for the eighth graders. It talks about the legal aspect of parental responsibilities, genetics testing, custody rights and visitations, child support, family law, welfare, all of that. It goes into more detail about the consequences of what happens when you end up having a child early. Again, when they talk about the sexually transmitted diseases, they talk more in detail about the consequences to and the consequences to the person who ends up getting the transmitted disease and what that means for them long terms. They also talk about a few more in detail, more than what they do in seventh grade. But other than that, also in eighth grade, they talk about contraception and the different types of contraception that is available on the market, or that is available to students, to people. Okay, that's a quick overview. Does anyone have any questions? These lessons, after fourth and fifth, they split. After that, it's boys and girls in their science classes, or in their health class in ninth grade. They're together. I will let Abuna answer that question. I don't think we can make a recommendation. It's going to be how much, because again, after each lesson, there's a part for you to discuss at home, and Abuna is going to go through the presentation of what to do at home. I think whoever it feels more comfortable and is going to be honest, that would be my answer for who's going to talk to them at home. And also who the child feels more comfortable with. And if the child doesn't feel comfortable speaking, if you have a boy and the mom and he doesn't feel comfortable speaking with the mom, then it doesn't make sense for the mom to keep speaking. And then the mom needs to coach the dad on how to do it with the son, and vice versa. Yani, but a girl may be comfortable speaking with her dad. I don't know. It depends. That's a call that every family is going to have to make depending on the individual child. Yes, fourth and fifth, they separate. The boys are separate and the girls are separate. Seventh, eighth, ninth, they are not separated. It's in their science class, co-ed. Yes. The kids already know that they're going to get this topic in school. They brought the page home. They already know. So opening the line of communication is not a bad idea to do it now. How much you want to do now is going to be up to you. We can answer that more after Abuna talks about what our responsibility is at home. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Again, this is only in the Cyfair School District. This is not in all districts, only in Cyfair.
Okay. So hopefully, after the end of my discussion, we'll answer some of the questions that you had. And if I didn't, we can speak about them together and maybe come up with an answer. So I'll speak about three main points. I'll try to be as brief as I can, so to leave more time for the question and answer. I'll speak about why it's important to speak about this topic with our children. Then I'll speak about some of the common apprehensions, why we shy away from speaking about this with our children. And then lastly, maybe some helpful tips on how to engage your children in this conversation about sexual topics. So why is it important for us to speak about this topic with our children? What do you guys think? Why do you think it's important? Why are you here today? Yes. To understand what Christ says or what the Bible says about this topic. Very good. So have a standard, right? To have a standard we follow. And of course, all of us agree that our standard is the Bible and the church, right? There are many things that we need to consider when we speak to our children about this. And I'll begin first by just mentioning some statistics. Why we need to speak about this? Look at some of these statistics. It says almost half of high school students have engaged in some type of sexual activity. And of course, as you know, statistics are delayed. So this was several years ago. But half of the students, if not maybe more, it's probably more than that. And if you consider if the digital network that we're in now, the digital media, like Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, and all these things, the numbers would be even greater of our kids exposed to this type of behavior. They did a survey with 600 kids who were surveyed, and only 1/3 of these kids spoke with their parents about sexuality. Only 1/3. And the thing we have to understand here is the 1/3 that spoke with their parents have a higher likelihood of not engaging in these type of activities than those who didn't. Sometimes we believe that us as parents, we don't have a say anymore. Our role is minimal compared to their peers, so my focus on maybe controlling the peers in the outside rather than focusing in on the inside of the home and family. The second reason why it's important for us to discuss is because of this misconception. Not my child. Not my child. I hate to break it to you, but it is our children will be affected and are affected. And it's in our community, in our church. Okay? There are children that I've seen very young in elementary school, in the age range between 7 and 8, that have been exposed to pornography and who watch it in our church. So saying that, no, I know my children won't do this. No, because if their children do this, they're not going to tell you they do it, right? They're going to keep it hidden from you. So this is something very important, and no child is immune to this exposure or activity. They're also being bombarded not only with viewing inappropriate content, but also inappropriate messaging between their friends in school and even between their friends here. And this can be in the form of images, jokes, words of like slang words, like they can say certain phrases that they understand the meaning to be inappropriate, but you and I don't because we don't live in that era. Or in that age group. So being vigilant about what's going on with your children and how they're messaging and so on, what kind of applications, and the types of applications that are dangerous. For example, Snapchat. Snapchat's very dangerous, and now other messaging apps are beginning to copy the same thing as Snapchat. And why is it so dangerous? Because somebody can send a message to your child that you can't control who sends us a message. So they send a message, they open the message, they view the message, and then the message deletes. So you have no idea. So when you go back and say, honey, let me see your phone, let me see you've been texting, you'll have no idea what they were exposed to. So it's very important. We cannot be with our children 24/7. Our job and duty as parents is to instill in our children the fear of God, because God can be with them 24/7 when we cannot. We need to train them to be independent in the world, not simply to shelter them. Some type of sheltering is good, but we can't shelter them forever. And then when they leave our house, it's a complete culture shock, and then they might be intrigued, and curiosity might get the best of them. Also, not only this, but also premature dating. This also happens in our church, where young kids will say, she's my boyfriend or girlfriend, and going up from elementary school, maybe for the younger kids, it's somewhat innocent, but the idea is still there. And we shouldn't, we should be very clear with our children, even from a young age, that we don't do this boyfriend and girlfriend. Everybody's your friend. And then as they progress, we need to teach them how to have friends of the opposite gender and what limits to set for these types of friendships. The third reason why we need to speak about this to them is because of the wrong understanding of appropriate sexual behavior. This is going to, as Lillian said, they teach, you know, the perversions of sexual intercourse, they teach, but they teach it as being normal. And this is where it's very important for us as parents to come in and say, this is a perversion. Because the Bible says that we should do things in the natural way that God had created them. And this is what St. Paul says. We can speak about the whole, I'm not really going to focus much about what the Bible says and what we believe, because I think we know it, but this is needs more time than what we have, you know, for today. But we need to be able to teach them the right understanding of appropriate sexual behavior. Just give you two quick points here. The school, we said that schools will teach two different or many different types of sexual contact as being normal. I was speaking with Tasoni about this, and in preparing, she says, you know what, I remember when I was in 10th grade in New Jersey, one of the slogans, and mind you, here in Texas, much more conservative than most of the other country. So New Jersey is pretty liberal. So one of the slogans in the 10th grade, and this was maybe, I don't want to give her age away, but, you know, long time ago. One of the slogans for their class, for their health class, was this, for the men. Sex can wait, masturbate. So they're what, telling the men here, okay, yes, you should, you know, wait, but then do it in this way instead. Of course, the church believes that this isn't the right behavior, because the Bible never mentions sexual intercourse or as being done as an individual. It was always done with a man and a woman. It was never done alone. So there's a lot of misunderstanding and wrong understanding of what is appropriate sexual behavior, and their peers and maybe even their teachers will tell them that these type of behaviors are okay and they're normal. And if they don't hear it from us that this is not normal, then they will believe any adult or their friends that tell them that it is normal. And it's important for us to engage in this conversation with them earlier than later. Earlier than later, because if they hear it from us first, then they'll have the right understanding in their mind. So when they hear the wrong one, they can say, you know, that's not the right understanding. So what are some of the common apprehensions? Why is it that we are sometimes apprehensive to speak to our children about this topic? And I'm saying these, again, to look at ourselves and say, okay, maybe I need to get over this apprehension and break the ice with my child. The first is the cultural stigma. In our culture, in Egypt, speaking about this topic is like taboo, big no-no, right? It's something we don't talk about, we don't do, we don't participate in. But actually, you know, these types of behaviors are on the rise even in Egypt. Unless they begin to start talking about this and engaging the family and the children, then things, you know, will get worse. Once the internet entered into any society, they're exposed to everything, just like you and I are exposed to. Maybe in the past, before the internet, Egypt maybe was somewhat controlled because they couldn't, you know, be influenced from the outside. But now there's this globalization through the internet and everybody has the same material. The second is ignoring the elephant in the room. Like, we know they're talking about it in school, but, you know, it's awkward, so if I don't bring it up, and we'll just ignore the elephant, and hopefully the elephant will walk out of the room. But actually, the elephant doesn't go anywhere. This is just a few messages in English that says ignoring the elephant in the room. I hope most of you are familiar with it. That's just like, you know, if we're in a room, and there's this obvious and pressing matter, and we just ignore it, pretending that it might go away, right? So it's just like, this another example would be like, if you know you have some animosity between you and someone else, and you walk in the room, and you pretend like everything is good, and you ignore the strife that's between you and someone else. This is ignoring the elephant. You know, it's there and it's looking at you in the face. So we tend to sometimes deal with this by just ignoring it. The third is some parents feel embarrassed to speak about it. And I heard somebody say, which parent should do the talking? And maybe this is a question because I may feel embarrassed. I'm embarrassed to speak to my boys, if I'm a female, about this topic. And if I'm a male, I feel embarrassed to speak to my daughter about this subject. So this embarrassment sometimes will keep some of us silent. But we need to break free from this, because at the end of the day, they're your children, and we change their diapers when they were young, and we nurture them all of this time, مشنيك في الآخر, and say, you're on your own. It's too early, يعني, for us to say that. Especially when the threat is so significant and severe. The fourth is we don't fully understand the technical information. Maybe from a medical aspect, we don't understand all of it, but we feel like I'm not equipped to talk about this with my child because I don't understand. But the answer to this is what? Educate yourself, right? Educate yourself. Educate yourself. Seek, you know, reputable resources to educate yourself on how I can understand these things better, to have a better understanding with my child. And actually, like what Lillian said, for us to go to the school website, download the information that's going to be taught to our children, review it, watch the videos that they're going to watch. So that way you know exactly what they're exposed to. And thank God they give this to us and they stick to the script. So it's not like the teacher will say something minandaha or minandu, but it'll say exactly what's here. So you know exactly what your child is receiving, and you know where you can interject, where you can correct. You can say, I saw the video today. What did you think about the scenario in this video? So you can be very engaged, and we have to do our homework. The fifth reason is talking about it means I approve. Some people have the idea that if we talk about it, that means I agree. But this is anything from the truth. We talk about many things, but it doesn't mean we agree. You know, this idea is we need to kind of get rid of. Just because we speak about it doesn't mean I agree that they can go now be sexually active. No. And they will understand that by your words. You know, they're not going to say, oh, mom talked about it, so it's okay. That's all of the time, the hour we've been talking, I've been talking to you about, you know, waiting and all of these things and why it's dangerous and how we should avoid it and what God says. They're not going to come out in the end and say, you know, it's okay. As long as we do our due diligence. Don't talk about it for 5 minutes or 2 minutes, and then that's it. The last apprehension is I don't want to corrupt their innocence. العيال لسه صغيرين وزي الملائكة مش عايز اخلي الشيطان. You know, this is the idea. But again, if you don't talk about it with your children, who will? Who will? They're friends, right? They're friends. Would you rather your children hear this information in particular from their friends or from you? From you, right? You are going to make the choice that is the safest for them. And you're going to help them and give them the advice that they need. So you're not going to corrupt their innocence. You know, they're hearing Balawi in the school and more Balawi on the bus. You got to be very keen. I said this many times, but be very keen on the unsupervised times with your children. The playgrounds, the bus rides, the bathrooms, anywhere there's not supervised, you have to be very keen about it with your children. So what are some helpful tips? Number one, it's not a one-time chat. It's not a thing you say, okay, you know, honey, next week, 6 p.m., we're going to sit down, we're going to talk for an hour, and this is what it's going to be. No, it doesn't need to be planned. Actually, that might make them nervous and you nervous, you know. But it need to, you know, talk about it, you know, many times. And that's why, actually, if you look at it, they give them this curriculum in the school district from 4th to 9th grade. And they rehash a lot of the same things over and over again to get it to stick, right? So we will need to have this conversation with them many times, especially as they're going, as their bodies are changing, they're going and developing, and as they hear things from their friends. Ask them, what did you guys talk about with your friends and so on. So that way you can be engaged in their life. The second is to address your child's concern, not just your own. So my own would be like what? I'm concerned that my child doesn't have sexual intercourse before marriage. Okay, mom, I'm not going to do it. Done. Okay, both happy? No. What about the feelings of the girl who's the boy has a crush on her? How do I deal with this feeling or this emotion of attraction? You have the young kids will come in confession and say, Abuna, I have a crush on this girl, and I don't know what to do. So if they need come to you and say, you can't just say ignore them. Let them speak, listen to them, and address their concerns. Not only, you know, you're out for your own agenda. Like, I don't want them to be sexually active, and that's it. The third is to be ready to take on the tough topics. And what I mean by tough topics are the ones that are in, that are popular in the media. I was just actually reading today, I read an article that Disney had a cartoon or has a cartoon. I don't know which one yet, but they didn't mention it in the article, where they had a picture of many couples who were kissing in the background, and one of them that was actually front and center was two men. And this is from Disney, unfortunately. So we need to be able to talk with even these tough subjects that maybe you and I, when we were growing up, were absurd and unthinkable, right? But now this is becoming what the media is pushing on them through various sorts, and we'll talk about this a little bit later. Number four is we will likely have to start the conversation. Look at these statistics. They said 19% of parents said that they were uncomfortable talking to their children about sex. 19% said they were uncomfortable, okay? So that's not too bad. But listen, what about the kids, the teens? Half of teens, 50% of teens said they were uncomfortable talking to their parents about sex. So the likelihood that your child will come to you to talk, yeah, it's 50-50 chance, right? Maybe, maybe not. Yeah, I have a good relationship with them, we talk. But maybe, maybe not. To them, maybe it's embarrassing. So we will likely have to be the ones to initiate this conversation. And it'll be based on your own particular child when this is. When you feel like they're ready, when they start questioning, then this might be a good time, you know, to sit and have this conversation. But it will likely have to come from you. They might not say, hey, mom, I want to talk about sex. Can we? They won't do that. The third, so what we emphasize. So when we speak to our kids, what are we going to emphasize? Of course, we're going to emphasize what the Bible teaches us, which is abstinence is the only godly way. Abstinence until marriage is the only godly way, because the Bible only speaks about this being blessed in the bonds of marriage between a man and a woman. And unfortunately, now we have to define that it's a man and a woman. You know, now you go through like even the church institutions and all the different businesses, they're going back to redefine, you know, their law. You know, now it's not just like harassment, for example. Harassment is not just a male to a female or female to a male. Now it can be a male to a male or female to a female. So even you heard about what was going on with Target and all of these transgender bathrooms and all that. So we're having to go back and to redefine because of the corrupt understanding of the society that we live in. But we need to back to basics. Take it back. This is what the Bible says about it, and this is what we live by in our home. So this is, of course, the first and foremost point that you need to emphasize with your children. The second is to train your children to establish firm boundaries. We have to teach our children how to establish boundaries from a very young age. You know, even like, for example, with my son who's in first grade, you know, we are trying to help him establish his boundaries, and not regarding this at all. I'll give you an example. Like he was saying, like the girls on the playground were playing with him and told him that they wanted to be princesses and for you to be the prince. And I was like, what did you say? He's like, I did it. I was like, Josh, did you feel comfortable? He's like, no. I was like, then say no, right? So say no, and this is how you say no. And why don't you suggest something else? So all of these things are trying to train our children to be able to say, when they're uncomfortable, no. And it starts at very young age, because if they don't learn how to say no, or they don't learn how that their no is powerful and valuable, then they will not say no to anybody. They'll be a people pleaser. And then the society and their friends will take advantage of them. But in regarding, of course, the sexuality, three things. We need to train them to set their firm boundaries. One, of course, is physical touch. No boy should touch you in this way. They say like side on the shoulder is okay. So we need to speak with your child what it is that's okay and how long can we touch with, can we express our feelings through touch. Of course, as the children get older, there should not be much physical contact between the genders. For example, with young children, we might, you know, give the young children a big hug and everything's great. As they grow older and they start to develop, especially between male and female, vice versa, there are no front hugs, for example. But it can be a tap on the shoulder. It could be a handshake, right? So we need to learn and teach our children how to set the appropriate boundaries and physical touch. The second is inappropriate conversation. How to train our children, or to train our children, that when there's inappropriate talk, you leave the conversation or try to change the subject of the conversation. But don't allow yourself to be exposed to it. Be able to say, you know what, I don't want anything to do with this. And you go and find something else to do or do something else. So we need to train them when there's inappropriate conversation, how to take yourself out of the conversation. Number three is exposure to inappropriate media. This is a big one. I really like it sometimes when the young children will come and confess. They feel very bad because they were inadvertently exposed to something on the internet. They were doing a project for school, and then they did a Google search to put a picture maybe in their presentation or to Google something, and something bad came up. So the child sees it and closes it and feels horrible. They come back, and they come. So this is, of course, is good because they didn't mean to see it, but yet they identify it and they said, no, this is wrong. Let me go and speak with Abuna. So we need to be very, very, very keen about how we monitor our children's internet use and computer use. Should be in public spaces, and you guys know this. But don't assume if they're doing schoolwork that this is the only thing that that Google is showing them. We don't know that, right? You don't say, like, I wish there was a function and say homework mode for Google, and then you get everything, you know, that's appropriate coming up. But unfortunately, that's not what happens. The next is reducing the exposure to tempting materials and or activities. What do I mean by reducing the exposure? The things, we have to be very cautious in what our children consume. All of us might be like, okay, we're cautious that they consume certain types of foods that are healthy, and especially now in times of fasting, we want to make sure they're consuming fasting food. The same goes with their materials that they're exposed to. Music, for example. What kind of music are your children listening to? Do you know the music? Do you know the lyrics of the music that they're listening to? Do you know what the music promote? Ever since the 1970s and 60s in that era, from then on, the music has gotten corrupt. Even from the 60s and 70s, some musicians, they would preach about suicide, or they would sing about suicide and how they want to, you know, kill yourself and this and that. And it's very horrible things. And kids sing these things, and although they might not realize it, but subconsciously, it's desensitizing them to this idea. And that's why the children nowadays, it's growing and hurting themselves. You know, they cut their wrists and they do all sorts of behaviors that are damaging to themselves. Also, school dances. Again, inappropriate places to be. The music that's played, the dancing that occurs. I mean, this, to my knowledge, this isn't square dancing, right? This isn't, anybody knows what square dancing is? No. Only square dancing is like, you know, like the Greeks, like but kind of back in the day, just kind of go like this. Right? It's very simple, nothing. That's not what's going on there. So when kids try to tell you, oh yeah, we're just going to be, you know, very moderate dancing, it's not moderate, right? The TV shows, the TV shows, and it has gotten, even now PG-13 is bad. but you have to be very cautious in this. And actually, if you noticed in the TV shows, they portray sex as casual. Yeah, we met together and we had intercourse and so on. It's very nonchalant. So when our children are exposed to this, this becomes normal to them. And there is a damaging philosophy that I heard once, and it's the worst philosophy I can think of, is that, you know, this happened in another church, and it was with one of the servants. One of the servants approached this servant and told her, you know, I heard your daughter is watching Grey's Anatomy. And Grey's Anatomy is very inappropriate, had even some homosexual content in it. And the servant said, the older servant who was doing this with her daughter, or knew her daughter was doing this, she says, I take it as an educational tool. We watch it together, and then we can analyze it together. Ya salam. Actually, the watching it together means mama what? She approves, right? All of the analytics is not going to tell them that this is wrong. So what the child will grow up thinking is what? I can view everything and analyze it. But what about the temptation? What about the exposure? You know how long it takes for the brain to remove an inappropriate image that was pleasing to them? Very long time. So now I'm going to sit there next to my daughter and watch her consume these things. We wouldn't allow our children to sit there and consume a poison and just sit there and say, this is going to be a learning experience. It's going to give you vomiting now. Are you ready? Okay, here comes the vomiting. Are you ready for the stomach aches? Yes. We don't do that. You're laughing because it's insane. But this is what some people, families have, is that let them go through it and we'll coach them through the sin. God have mercy. So I'll leave you with this final verse from Proverbs 22. He says, train up your child in the way he shall go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Train your children from now when they are young, and when they grow, they won't depart from the way of the Lord. It's my portion. Any questions? Yes. Okay, the music. And I'll tell you what I tell them in confession. There is a lot of music out there, but just because there's a lot of music that's bad, I can't say that, okay, khalas, everybody's bad, so we'll join them. We can't say that. Second is there's two things regarding music we have to be concerned about. One is the lyrics, and two is the beat. The beat. The lyrics should not contain sexual content, foul language, profanity, or violence. All of these three have shown when they do this, they actually become more sexual, more violent, and use abusive language. And I can tell you from the children in our church, they come and confess and say, Abuna, I use profanity. I say bad words. I ask them, do your friends say bad words? Yes. Do you listen to music with bad words? Yes. Do you watch TV shows that you hear bad words? Yes. So what's expected? That they will do the same, right? So part of the treatment is to minimize as much as we can the exposure to these. There are a selection of songs that don't have this, but we have to be choosy. Some artists, they have some songs with bad words and then maybe one or two that don't. And that the lyrics are okay, they're motivational or whatever. Okay, khalas, these are okay, but you can't listen to these from this artist. But what they might say is, okay, mom, dad, listen to a sample from this artist. And they pick for you what? The good song. And then you say, okay, you can buy the album. And you give them the $12 on iTunes and they buy the album. And then you don't see the explicit ones. The second is the beat. The beat is important. Why? Because the beat is actually, it can be excitatory to a person. I remember once when I was I graduated college. And I was working with an African American. And we got to talking about music and rap music and things like that. And I told him, you know, the lyrics, of course, most of it is bad. But even if it wasn't bad, it's the beat itself. And he's like, no, no, no. I was like, you know, the beat itself makes people do things that otherwise we would say they're crazy. And he's like, what do you mean? I was like, yeah, it happens. And just what happened that day, I gave him a ride home. So I was taking him home, and we stop at the stoplight, and the car next to us is booming with the bass. The trunk is like flying up and down from the bass. And then in it are like five guys that are like jumping up and down with the beat of the music. So I told him, Eric, look over there and just turn off the music. And you saw these people doing this. What would you say? He's like, probably they're crazy. Yeah, exactly. So make him do things that otherwise would be crazy. So the beat is very important. And that's why I don't agree at all with like Christian rap. This is utter confusion to our children. We're going to mix the beat of the world with the world with maybe words of Christ? No. The beat and the lyrics. And we have to know and hear what our children are listening to and are exposed to. This is a big daunting task. Why? Because they have many avenues. They can get music from YouTube. They can get music from their friends. They can get music from purchase music, they can get music from the radio. You know, we need to teach them the principles, and when they ask for us to buy them any music or anything, we screen it before we give it to them. And a good way, maybe, to see what they're listening to is maybe in the car. You say, you know, why don't you, you know, play your playlist? Or you can look at their phone and see what kind of music it is. And, you know, just say, hey, let me see your phone, and then you play the music that's in their phone. But we have to do our due diligence regarding the music. Is that clear? There's a lot of music. There's the Christian music, as Wissam said. Of course, there's classical music. There's the hymns of the church. There's some alternative music that's, you know, not bad, you know, in its content and beat. So there are some, you know, certainly. Even the cartoons, to be honest. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I still watch cartoons. That's okay. It's not an insult. Yani, we do them a favor by monitoring what they watch. And they grow knowing that this is not the standard I grew up with. But if we let them watch whatever is on TV, then they will have no standard. And then this will begin to influence their decision making. Okay, this is appropriate. And as the media goes, so I go. No. I know it's not easy, and it can be painful, but we have to. And there are certain filters you can do, like on Netflix and so on, where you can set age limits and rating content, like only allow a child to watch, you know, PG-13 and lower. But we have to. And to be quite honest with you, Yani, if you can get away from it at all, that's the best. The problem is a lot of us use the TV and the devices as babysitters. للأسف. And that's because it's convenient for us, we let our kids do it. But raising children, nobody said that it was a convenient process. It's painful. But the reward is great when it works out. You know, when you raise somebody like Saint Beshoy or Saint Abram or any of these saints, this is something that you will be crowned with in heaven for. So this is a talent we have. No one said it was easy. No one said it's not time-consuming and painful, but it's well worth it. You know, in the middle school, as they'll learn in these classes, they're having a lot of hormonal changes that's going on. And you and I went through the same thing when we were young, right? We had crushes on this person and that person and went from one person to another person. You tell them that this is a normal process of, you know, being attracted to the opposite gender. If this wasn't, then none of us would be married. But it's a normal process, but then it's not the right time for it. But be open. Let him express how he feels and why he feels it. And what is it that you're attracted to? Oh, she's pretty. Okay, this is not the only thing, you know, because, you know, as people get older, they don't look as nice. So what's going to happen later if you marry this person when she gets old? You know, you're going to just say bye-bye? You know, Tete and Giddu have been married for 45 years and 50 years. So there must be something that's more deeper than just what's on the outside. So allow them to express themselves freely. And then from what they tell you, you go on to that. Okay? But don't ever, 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 when they're expressing themselves, say like, Ibni! Or like, Allah, Ta'ala, kid! They will immediately shut off and they'll never come back to you again. Okay? I tell all of the children that come to me that have crushes or anything, share it with your parents. And you know, I would say 70% of them say, I'm scared. I'm scared what they're going to say. This means that if they say this, that then mom and Baba are going to be upset with me, I'm going to get punished, or they're not going to let me play with some mutual friends. نَخُوتَ بِدَأَكِدَ بِالرَّاحَةَ And let it be a teaching to teach them. And maybe this can be a door to open to begin to talk with them about, you know, this subject. Okay. Any other questions? We should have passed the papers, right? Yeah. 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 So her question was, do we stop it or, yes. So she's asking, do we have to be separate? From the boy, tell our kids to be separate from that boy or girl, or what? Again, in the teaching, and it depends on the age of the children, right? In elementary school, the kids all play together, and there's nothing. As they grow older, the boys will hate the girls, and the girls will hate the boys. And then as they get a little older, the boys will like the girls and the girls will like the boys. Depending on where they are is how we would address it. Taban, the more they get older, yes, then if you have a crush on this person, then you need to stay away because now they're emotionally charged and the hormones are very strong. So if it's not for the sake of opportunity, they might fall. Or the sake of being scared, they might fall. So yes, as they get older, you know, not associating with that friend until these feelings have subsided is a good thing. And actually, the friendship between the genders is a big topic. Maybe we can talk about, you know, for our children. But just naturally, like maybe middle school or seventh grade and up, our boys shouldn't have girls that are best friends. And our girls shouldn't have boys that are best friends. They can be friends. You know, we have many of them here in the church. But they can't be best friends. The individual, you know, being in isolation with one another, texting, you know, a boy or a girl back and forth, just the two of them, not in a group. Spending time with each other. They're not alone by themselves. All of these things are like what I was saying here, like they were points of temptation. If we allow them to be in points of temptation, then they might fall. We need to guide them and tell them this is the appropriate behavior and these are explain their feelings, why they're feeling what they're feeling, and tell them that we only go through this, you know, courtship or dating whenever we're ready to get married. And we're not ready to get married yet, okay? So, take it kida bihadu, but we need to be very clear on how we stand. Because if we're not clear, they will interpret that as being mom and daddy are okay. Mommy and daddy are okay. Yes. Will the issue be discussed in Sunday school? No, the issue is not discussed really in Sunday school. I'm not sure about the high school curriculum, but we have what we call a fight program. I think some of you have went through that. I think we did it like 2 years ago. We typically do it once every 4 years, and it's in the summer, and the kids will attend that for, a week. And they will get the thorough rundown just like this, but from the church's perspective, right? We used to do every 4 years. Me and Abuna were talking yesterday. The day before yesterday about this and maybe making it once every 3 years. Has to have it more exposed. And because it's middle and high school curriculum? So there's a middle and high school curriculum. When we do it once every 4 years, and they would get it once in sixth grade or seventh grade or eighth grade, and then again in ninth, 10th, or 11th grade. So they'll get two of these week-long sessions before they graduate high school. Again, this is what the church is offering, but the home is the most important. Believe me, the home is the most important. If we are not shy and we speak about it, we can give you the information like that we discussed in the FIGHT program. We can give it to you. You can read it, discuss it with your children. But the al-asas comes min al-bayt. Okay. Yes, Christine. The program. Yes, actually, last time we did it, Abuni Nen gave lectures to the parents, three lectures to the parents, while the kids were learning their lesson. So maybe we can have Abuna come and redo that through the Adam and Eve. So Lily is saying the program has a part for the parents, for them to be educated as well. So again, I think the material is available. We can share it if you'd like. But it shouldn't be a problem. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Yanni, for coming and for valuing this education for your children, because it is very important. And again, we're here to support and help in any way that we can. But I pray we will take a positive stance and to begin to open the dialogue with our children regarding the subject of sexual activity. تفضلوا نصلي.